Atheist Nomads, episode 427, Christian Facebook Troll Farms.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin, and joining me is Lauren.
Hello.
I got my COVID booster.
Yes, you did.
Yep, did that on Friday, and I was told, and from what I'd seen, the symptoms should be about on par with, or the side effects you have from it should be on par with what you had with the second dose.
Yeah, how did that turn out for you?
Well, with the second dose, I had some fatigue and headache for a couple days.
Yeah, you were grumpy for a few days, but...
And then this time around, it was, I'd put it on par with having influenza for 2 days with no respiratory symptoms.
Yeah, you were sick as a dog.
I had fevers at night, chills one night, sweated like all night the next night.
Yeah.
I had,
it was mostly that fever.
Yeah. That first day after it, I had horrible joint and muscle pain.
It was so funny. Everything he described, I kept looking at him like, welcome to my world.
The next day was just nausea all day long.
Nausea, random nausea, everything hurts.
There's headaches, of course, too, which have continued on past that, still going on.
Yeah, well, better than having it for 3 weeks.
Absolutely. Yes, that is absolutely the thing. Going through that, if there had been, if it was COVID, there would have been respiratory symptoms of, basically pneumonia, if not full-blown pneumonia, for 3 weeks. And as somebody who had pneumonia for almost 3 months, I can definitely say, oh, hell no, you don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple days of not feeling good is well worth not having weeks of not feeling good.
Yeah. Yeah. He was one of the early ones to get it early this year, late last year.
The first one was right before New Year's, and then the second one was...
shortly after.
Third week of January.
So yeah. So you were one of the first ones to get the booster. And rest of us suckers have to wait.
Well, what they're finding is, immunity wanes the further out you get. And I was 8 months past, pushing 9 months past the second dose.
Yeah.
So worth it. They've got the list of high risk groups that they're recommending it for to basically cover everyone.
Yeah, go fat people. Woo.
If you're even just overweight, not just obese, but overweight. If you are a former smoker, not just a current smoker.
So those of you who ever tried that one cigarette in high school, there you go.
And as a overweight former smoker, who works in healthcare, I definitely qualified. Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and move on to a news story that's kind of a dusting off the degree.
Okay, that's interesting.
Combo.
Combo breaker.
This is just it was a really cool report out of Religion News Service on what's going on with religion in Guatemala. And for this to make sense, we need some history first. This article goes into some history. But there's more that helps it make even more sense if you go further back. Guatemala, of course, before the Spanish, 1,000 years ago.
It's a country in Central America.
Yes, there's that part. Yes.
I got that.
1,000 years ago, it was the entirety of modern Guatemala was in the Mayan Empire.
Right.
That had been on decline, but was still the Mayan culture when the Spanish arrived. Much of the Mayan culture has survived through the centuries, and the Mayan languages, and some of the folk religions survived as well, with some intermingling with Catholicism, as Catholicism does.
Incestuous bastard.
Then after with the independence movements, Guatemala went through being part of the Mexican Empire, and then the Central American Federation, and then finally ended up being independent, by which point it was taken over by American fruit companies.
That's bananas.
The banana republics are the Central American countries where the former versions of the Dole and Chiquita fruit companies were trying to run everything to just get as much profit out of these countries as possible. Buying off politicians, paying rebels if the government got a little too against them, supporting governments when the rebels were trying to get rid of the government that was backing the fruit companies. And that all finally culminated in a 20-year-long civil war that went through the 70s and 80s. During that civil war, there was genocide against the Mayan people, trying to remove as much of the not Guatemalan national, the people who don't fit with the Guatemalan nationality. By the end of the civil war, one thing that was that is interesting that this Religious News Service article covers is a lot of people were done with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church had been backing the government.
When? During the 80s?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Catholic Church was backing the government. They were promoting the, you know, kind of Spanish-speaking Guatemalan nationalist.
Eurocentric
movement. And complicit in some of the genocide. Not necessarily actually helping it happen, but definitely not speaking out against it and probably supporting it some. So in 1970, Guatemala was more than 90% Catholic. Basically, the only non-Catholics at that time would have been people who were following. There would have been a little bit of Protestant conversions before that. And the rest would have been people who were still just practicing traditional Mayan beliefs.
Cool.
Now, less than 45% of Guatemalans are Catholic.
That's a big, yeah.
In 50 years, they've lost half of their numbers. And there is some weird stuff going on with that. 42% of Guatemalans are Protestant now. So that is, you know, we're still talking about
missionaries and stuff.
87% still being Christian.
Okay, yeah.
And what you've ended up having is both the Catholic Church doing this liberation theology and the Pentecostals and evangelicals coming through preaching a liberation theology, which is the basic idea being, you know, this sometimes right wing, sometimes left wing. We need to be a strong nation and not reliant on all the foreign people to get prosperity. And it's kind of this mix of prosperity, gospel, and social justice.
Okay.
Often with a racist anti-minority.
Naturally.
Bent on it. Yeah.
That always has to slide in there, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Andres Giron was a Catholic priest serving in Guatemala near the Mexican border in Mayan communities during the end of the final period of the Civil War. He got to witness some of the atrocities himself.
Yeah.
He got very disillusioned with the church not doing anything about it and being tacitly approving it. And he spoke out in favor of land reform to help out the poor people, which pissed off the church leadership.
Who are like all about poor people, so I don't get that, but whatever.
They were backing the government, and he was promoting socialism. So he eventually got, he barely survived one of the genocide attempts himself, despite not being Mayan. And in 1988, he had a profile in the New York Times that called him Father Revolutionary.
It was making quite an impact there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So he eventually was exiled both from the Catholic Church and from Guatemala. First went to Mexico. He spent some time in Rome and then traveled around through the U.S. and Europe and eventually settled on being Eastern Orthodox.
Okay.
He then returned back to Guatemala after his exile was, you know, the government had changed enough that he wouldn't get arrested for, you know, upon setting foot back in the country. And went back to the Mayan communities. And by that point, he hadn't formally converted to Eastern Orthodox, but developed quite the following of at least a few thousand people. And when he did actually convert formally to Eastern Orthodoxy, it was the largest mass conversion in the history of the Eastern Orthodox Church since the Kievan Rus.
When was that?
In the 11th century.
Oh, okay. That one.
Yeah. We've done dusting off the degrees on that with the Russian Orthodox Church and the Russian Schism.
Schism.
The high estimates for how many people have joined this movement is 100,000. The more realistic are 10,000 to 15,000.
Well, that's quite a difference in...
Oh, yeah. Nobody has good numbers on how many Eastern Orthodox Guatemalans there are. And interestingly, they are not part of any of the particular national Orthodox churches, because, you know, there is no immigrant community that it started from. They are considered a self-sufficient parish of the Patriarchate of Constantinople.
Oh, that's so cool. So not like here in Boise where we have, you know, the Russian Orthodox Church, the Greek Orthodox Church, and usually if you travel around, you'll see the kind of ethnic.
Yeah, you go to Portland and you'll find Ukrainian Orthodox and probably Serbian Orthodox churches, and they're under the Ecumenical Patriarch.
Cool.
So that's pretty cool.
Mayan
Orthodox. And it's mostly Mayans. They have 5 priests at this point. The formal conversion was in 2010, and Giron died in 2014.
Okay.
Others have continued. There are now 5 priests, and they are, you know, 5 is not a lot for 10 to 15,000 people. That's also part of why they have no idea how many actual members they have.
Right.
So they've actually started a seminary and are training new Orthodox priests.
Well, that would be really interesting to learn more about.
Yeah. They've only got a few students right now. It's very small. Generally, seminaries are for... And when I say seminary, I'm talking about real seminaries, not what Mormon high school students do.
Oh, okay.
Actual seminaries where it's professional ministerial education. That usually is graduate study that comes after a college degree.
Okay, yeah, right.
In
what you went to.
What I did. Half of. For this seminary in Guatemala, there aren't a lot of colleges and there aren't a lot of college graduates. So they've gone with the much more attainable, you only need to be a high school graduate and you can jump right in.
Cool. I mean, what difference does it really make?
If the undergrads are in religious studies or theology or something like that, there's benefits to having, you know, 7 years of schooling for the thing you're going to be doing.
But when you're just beginning and you only have 5 priests and you just need to churn out a few others,
you need people.
Who cares?
You do you focus more on the on-the-job training after they graduate.
Yeah.
Or just get them to know the basic skills. They wouldn't be getting any of the theology or history or any of that. That would be almost completely just a focus on what are the skills you need to do the job.
Cool.
So yeah, that's kind of neat.
I mean, it's really neat that Guatemalans are leaving religion,
and
at least a little bit.
10 to 15% of Guatemalans are non-religious at this point.
So that's pretty cool.
Now, in a country like Guatemala, you are going to find in surveys that the sum of religions is greater than 100%. In countries like that, you will find atheists who still identify as Catholic.
Right.
You will find pagans who also are Catholic. You'll find atheists who are pagan. You'll find...
Fair enough.
Yeah. Somebody who either just on different times of the day will answer differently or will mark off more than one check mark. All right, now in regular news, and that was one I actually had marked for last week, but it was, we were going long already, and...
Yeah, no kidding. Like, I went to bed. You guys were, like, still going.
And then we talked for, like, another hour after that.
Yeah, there was no hope of seeing my husband that night. It's like, all right, I'm just putting on the CPAP and going to bed. Still, must have been fun.
But yeah, I set this one aside. I also thought it
pretty cool.
It deserved its own segment.
We honeymooned in the Yucatan, so I have a little, it's like, oh, Mayan, I like that. That's cool. Typical, you know, white suburban tourists' interest in the Mayan culture.
And I did two mission trips to Cancun, where the first one was building a church in like downtown actual Cancun, nowhere near the hotel zone. The other one was out in the surrounding area in a Mayan village where the people present...
Like, your dad lived there in Guatemala for a while.
And then, yeah, my dad was a missionary in Guatemala for 4 years. And
we'll get back there.
I have a stepsister who is Guatemalan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. It was cool. So our first two stories are both Facebook related. The first one, a new report coming out of MIT has, using leaked internal documents from Facebook, has found that 19 of the top 20 Facebook pages for American Christians in 2019 were run by European troll farms.
Trolled.
Mostly from Kosovo and Macedonia. Not Russia.
Well, Russia adjacent.
Probably funded by Russians.
I mean, that's
and Russia. But yeah. These 19 pages, and again, this is 19 out of the top 20 Christian Facebook pages.
Whatever the hell that means.
Out of the Christian Facebook pages, American Christian Facebook pages, the 19 of the 20 with the most likes.
Yeah, well, I have a hard time off the top of my head thinking of what a top Facebook Christian page would be, but that's because I'm not Christian. So
right.
Never mind.
And the list is actually pretty crazy. Number one was Be Happy, Enjoy Life. Number two is Jesus is My Lord. Number three was You Can. Number four was Speak Loudly. Five was Purpose of Life. Six was Positive Quotes. Seven was Memories of a Loved One. Eight was Smile and Shine.
Oh my God.
Nine was Light of the World.
These are terrible.
10 was Why Not Us.
Oh,
11 was Happiness in Your Mind. Then there was My Life, Life is Beautiful, Blessing, Conscious Reminder, Blessed, Simply Beautiful, Motivational Quotes and Videos, and Light Candle for a Lost Loved One.
Okay, so this sounds to me like an AI made up a whole bunch of, just like you, of course this is Troll Farm Haven, because they all sound like some computer could have made up the titles.
I'm sure that I have seen, when I last spent any measurable amount of time on Facebook, that I saw people sharing memes from Be Happy, Enjoy Life.
Okay, probably.
A particular cousin comes to mind. These were run, most of these were run by, no, this was just a couple troll farms running multiple pages, generating memes that were all Christian-y, but pushing towards extreme, but just nudging.
Yeah.
And they were all definitely on the provocative side. This was definitely a coordinated effort to help radicalize American Christians.
Not that they needed the help.
Not that they needed the help. These troll farms were targeting the exact same audience that Russia was manipulating in 2016 on Facebook.
Yeah. Again, a couple cousins come to mind.
Uh-huh. Facebook was well aware of the troll farms and has done basically nothing to stop them. The report's author, Jeff Allen, who used to be a senior level data scientist at Facebook, wrote, quote, "Our platform has given the largest voice in the Christian American community to a handful of bad actors who, based on their media production practices, have never been to church. They were not able to calculate how much reach they actually got or how much impact they actually had.
Right, that's hard to measure.
But they definitely found some of the memes they produced were shared millions and millions of times.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I mean, a part of me is, I'm grinning over here, because we didn't get sucked into that. Of course, we're atheists, so why would we? But people I know didn't get sucked into that. They don't share these things. So I haven't seen a lot of these things. But we live in a bubble of our own making on Facebook. So my mom loves to join groups that are a little bit more radical just to, quote, see the enemy, see through my enemy's eyes kind of thing. And I just can't do it because it's exhausting and ew. And so somebody's got to do it. But I can't imagine sitting through all the bullshit, positive vibe, just saccharine crap that is made up for these things just so that they can put in one meme that has a little bit more of a provocative statement.
Yep.
Or one that just nudges the Christian, oh, woe is me, you know, narrative just a little bit more. Ugh.
Yeah.
Feel good crap. I hate it.
Now, I know we got sucked in and friends of ours got sucked in on foreign propaganda in 2016, because there was plenty on the left as well.
True.
In 2016.
I was just referring to this in particular.
But this particular flavor of it, it's gone from just make everybody angry to, oh, wait, you don't have to make everybody
angry. I want to
see
how many.
You just need to get the one side.
I want to see how many of the January 6th people's Capitol rioters shared these memes, or their wives shared these memes.
I'm sure quite a few did. So Facebook was down on Tuesday for 6 hours.
I probably should have noticed, but I didn't.
Yeah, and I only found out because it was in the news.
I guess it was auto-generating, like, new stuff, or I was just not...
Or you missed those 6 hours.
Or I just missed the 6 hours or something.
So this impacted Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. It was a configuration change on the backbone routers, that was wrong. Populated out to the routers and brought everything down. They discovered it, fixed it, and it took 6 hours total to get it back up.
Yikes.
So for some people, it probably would have only been an hour outage.
Oh, okay.
For some, it was a full six.
Based on where your server was in line of being rebooted?
And not necessarily rebooted, but getting the new. Yeah.
Sorry, layman's terms. Jeez.
So that's the actual reason it was down. Basically, a DNS configuration error screwed things up. And when you're dealing with a super massive global distributed network, stuff takes time to propagate. Errors take time to propagate, and fixes take time to propagate. And because it's so massive and there are so many servers, it is ridiculously complex and incredibly automated, and a single person can actually make a single error and take the whole thing down.
Nice.
What was not at fault was Mercury being in retrograde.
Oh, God. Wait, was it?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Actually, Instagram is a Libra, and was first published on the Apple App Store 11 years to the day before everything went down. So it was on Instagram's birthday.
Aw. Happy birthday, Instagram.
And Mercury, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto were all in retrograde.
Which apparently means something to somebody.
According to astrologer Lisa Stardust,
oh, I love it.
Writing for Teen Vogue.
Ugh. Riley is never allowed to have Vogue.
Mercury retrograde occurs 4 times a year. During this time, miscommunication, technological meltdowns, travel issues, and faulty news are rampant.
That just sounds like every day.
She went on to say, there are six planets which are currently retrograde in the sky at the moment. Mercury, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. All of these planets are playing a role in the delay to fix social media. Jupiter connects people.
Oh my God.
Saturn takes on the task of fixing matters.
Jesus.
Uranus is ruler of the internet and innovation.
What?
Neptune is the planet of confusion and illusion.
Oh, I like that one.
And Pluto represents turmoil and therefore annoyances. With these five planets in retrograde motion and Mercury added into the mix, it's safe to assume that it'll be a hot minute before any of these technological issues are reconciled.
She wasn't wrong. 6 hours is a pretty long time to wait for your Instagram to load, but I love that. I mean, just way to take it and run. She's getting paid by the word.
She wasn't the only, you know, Erica Smith at Cosmo. She was the one that brought up Instagram's Libra status.
Oh my God.
And
these people are insane.
Oh, wait, no, not on Instagram's birthday. October 6th would be Instagram's birthday for being on the App Store. So off by 2 days.
Oh, okay. Well, then it doesn't count at all.
But still, a Libra, and bad luck happens to Libras, especially when Mercury's in retrograde.
This is what I'm going to be for Halloween next year. Scary.
But back to the one from Teen Vogue. Saturn takes on the task of fixing matters. Uranus is ruler of the internet and innovation. Is she talking about planets or Roman gods?
When you're talking astrology, it doesn't matter.
Because that sounds like she's talking about gods.
She's talking... No, yeah. Okay, so the planets all each represent a kind of the spirit or the incarnation of the god. So yes, that is exactly...
But this particular language is much more personification to where it sounds a lot more like she believes the planets are actually deities.
Yep, and depending on where they are in the sky, your fate on Earth is changed, so yeah.
And she also missed the memo that Pluto is not a planet.
Can't convince astrologers of that.
I'm glad they aren't paying that close of attention, because if they did, the alternative to making Pluto not a planet would have been to add, I think it was 5 more planets.
Right. It doesn't matter. Astrology is only, 150 years old?
The modern version, yeah.
The modern version of it, 100 years old or something. Like 1800s, it was like a Victorian fashion fad thing to do. And, you know, now newbies, new ageists run with it.
Modern white astrology.
Yeah.
Specifically, yeah.
Stuff you see in Teen Vogue.
Now, of course, it would have to be even newer if you're including Pluto, because Pluto wasn't even discovered
Pluto
until the 20th century.
Right, and I've never heard Pluto referred, because I don't know. I'd have to ask my cousins. Everybody's got a cousin in these stories. All right.
Hopefully not in the next one.
Ugh.
Or any of the rest of them. In Tennessee, Governor Bill Lee is continuing to take no actual actions to stop the spread of COVID. Basically any of the Republican governors around the country right now. So, of course, Tennessee's in as disastrous of shape as, well,
as
all the
expect.
Other states with Republican governors right now. But that doesn't mean he's not using words to try to change things, specifically with... Oh, and his state has the distinction of the most COVID-19 infections per capita at the moment.
You gotta give our governor credit. At least it was better before he left.
Yeah. So Bill Lee is calling for October 11 to be a day of prayer and fasting, saying... Time in prayer is transformational. It changes our hearts, strengthens us, and reminds us that we are never alone. I'd like to invite Tennesseans to join us for a day of prayer and fasting on 10/11 and thank God for our blessings and ask Him for healing, grace, and favor. In other words, not even mentioning the pandemic, not mentioning COVID, just we need healing.
Literally a Hail Mary. Please, God, save us.
Yeah. Like, he could have at least said that it was a day of prayer and fasting to ask for help with the pandemic. But then again, we know what you actually need to do for that.
That would be admitting you have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Instead, he seems to be going with the approach of ignore it and let the hospitals deal with the problem.
Until it goes away on its own after everybody dies.
Yep.
Freaking Tennessee. Do you have McGeechin in there? Okay. Seriously, somebody needs to put a shock collar on that lady.
Actually, let's do her next.
I mean, credit is where credit is due. Our governor is a complete wuss when it comes to the Republican stance.
Oh, yeah. But he's at least better than the lieutenant governor.
Every time he leaves the state, he has to write a letter saying, ignore everything that the lieutenant governor says.
Well, he's...
didn't quite do that this time, but...
he only had to start doing that after his trip out of the state in May, when Lieutenant Governor McGeechin, as acting governor, wrote an executive order prohibiting any mask mandates in the state.
And the time before that, when he left the state, and she did some other crazy ass... she's had a rally at the Capitol with a bunch of white supremacists. I mean, it's just one thing after another with
it. Oh, yeah. So anyway, now, less than 24 hours after Brad Little left the state to go visit the border.
Because that's important right now.
Because Idaho has... and by border, we're not talking about Idaho's international border. No. The southern border. Which, as governor of Idaho, he has, like, it's literally none of his business.
Yeah, no, it's none of his business, but somebody down there called for help, and he sent, what, 10 troops?
State police members.
Like, not even freaking troops.
Yeah, the only thing he has recently...
he sent ambassadors down, basically, to do something. And they've been, and so he's been invited to go along on this little vacation.
So within 24 hours of him leaving, Janice McGeechin tried to activate the Idaho National Guard to send them down to the border to secure it.
Can't do that.
To which the commander of the Idaho National Guard told her,
flipped her the bird.
Ma'am, you do not have the authority to make that request.
As his head hits the desk. Ugh.
And she signed an executive order banning vaccine passports or mandatory COVID vaccines or testing at K-12 schools and universities in Idaho.
Yeah, she can't do that either. I mean, technically, she can do whatever she wants, but it's not going to work.
As executive, acting executive, she can issue executive orders. This one, Brad Little, you know, Idaho's governor, has already responded that he will be rescinding that upon his arrival.
Like, what a headache. Like, leaving the state isn't worth it.
This is a long enough trip that he couldn't have gotten away with his, she's not acting governor while I'm gone.
That's what he did last time.
Yeah, but he was only gone for like
2 days.
He kept it as short as possible to avoid that. He should have just not gone on this trip.
This is why governors and lieutenant governors should not be separately elected. Because you're going to end up with a freaking coup.
Yeah. So
how she hasn't gotten Bundyites to go down there armed and dangerous to take over the Capitol, I don't know, but
she's tried. She has already tried a couple times.
It's insane that she's still lieutenant governor.
Yeah.
Freaking Idaho. Bumfuck nowhere, Idaho.
So she is claiming that this is just amending Little's standing executive order prohibiting vaccine passports to enter any government buildings in Idaho.
She's just making it for everybody.
She's just making sure that it covers and extended a bit to cover schools, to make it so that schools can't not have COVID spread through them. Well, to make it so that schools in Idaho can't not be super spreaders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So dumb, it makes me want to cry.
It's just so, so bad.
You know how we almost wiped out polio, but there was a couple of countries that fucked it up for everybody?
Yeah.
Idaho's that country. one of them, anyway. God damn it.
There's about 20.
Oh, god damn it. Seriously, the rest of the world could wipe it out, and we'd still be like, but our freedom!
Last month, Representative Madison Cawthorn, Republican from North Carolina, joined several members of the state legislature, various candidates for various offices, and radical religious right activists at the Temple Baptist Church in Mount Airy, North Carolina, for the North Carolina Faith and Freedom Coalition Salt and Light Conference.
Okay, sounds real churchy.
At the event, Cawthorn delivered a definitely Christian nationalist speech declaring spiritual battle in the evil and vile Washington, D.C. against people like Nancy Pelosi and her, quote, cold, evil eyes, end quote.
Oh my God, they really hate her. That poor woman. Not that she's perfect, but damn.
He encouraged the audience to follow the examples of David, Daniel, and Esther, who, quote, influenced the governments of their day to uphold Christian principles, end quote. He picked three Old Testament figures, mm-hmm. pre-Christian.
They're the real stabby kind.
In other words, Jews.
Jews. That's funny. Go influence your governments like the Jews. Wow. That got dark real fast. Sorry.
No, this one wasn't. This one isn't. Him going all anti-Semitic with
no,
it. It
I
was
know.
Him being
no.
so stupid to not realize what he was saying.
Yes, I got that. I was just really, that it's funny that works.
And so he's now taken these remarks and turned them into a campaign ad urging Christians to, quote, take our country back, end quote.
Right. Because couldn't see that one coming.
Salt and light, interfere with governments like Jews. Take our country back.
I'm sure he had no idea he was talking about Jews.
Okay, and what's even funnier with the examples he used? David, Daniel, and Esther. Okay, so you've got David, the murderous, adulterous, polygamous king. Daniel, the eunuch slave in the court of Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, who was an astrologer.
Writing for Teen Vogue.
And Esther, who lied to get into the king's harem and then was so good in the sack that he made her queen.
I mean, that's influencing, definitely.
And then finally admitted to her husband about her background only when Mordecai had convinced the king to murder all Jews.
So she just like slowly raised her hand. She's like,
yeah.
By the way,
if he's going to do that, he's going to need to kill me, too.
And what did he do?
Passed a new law saying that if anybody tries to kill a Jew, the Jew can kill them back.
Okay, way to go, Esther.
And killed the bad guy. Yeah. For trying to kill his wife.
Forget all those thousands of other people.
Those are the examples he picked.
Terrible examples. He couldn't have chosen, like, Jesus.
Jesus didn't try to influence the government.
I know.
He stayed out of it.
He did the smart thing.
There are no biblical examples of Christians trying to influence governments. The biblical
That's
Christian...
That's really interesting.
Yeah, the biblical Christian examples are Christians saying to keep out of politics.
I love that. You just throw that shade right back at him.
Nah, we'll skip this one. In the Vatican City, there is a vaccine mandate fully in effect now. You are not allowed to work or enter into the Vatican City if you have not had at least one dose of one of the COVID vaccines.
Okay.
This included the Swiss Guard.
Oh, okay.
Which is the ceremonial military force in the Vatican. The Swiss Guard also followed the vaccine mandate.
I had a joke about the Swiss Guard once. Something about holy cheese. I can't remember what it was, though. I just remember it made me laugh for, like, way too long.
It was something like that. Six members of the guard initially refused, and there's only 135 total members, and six had initially refused to get the vaccine.
Okay.
When they got suspended, three went ahead and got the shots.
Okay.
The other three resigned.
Okay.
And will presumably be getting sent back to Switzerland.
They're actually Swiss?
They are actually Swiss.
So weird.
Yeah.
I don't question it. I just report it.
They've made it. Oh, and including the Swiss Guard in this requirement, since they are technically a military force, it fits with how basically every military in the world that has access to vaccines is requiring vaccination. And also with the fact that about a dozen of the 135, or 10% of the Swiss Guard, up to this point, have contracted COVID, been known to have contracted COVID. And so there is definite concern about them spreading illness
wherever they may roam
in a city state where the average age of the residents is on par with a retirement home.
Geriatric society.
A independent commission established at the request of the French Catholic Church and funded by the French Catholic Church, but they let it run independently with a mix of experts, and they claim that the church fully cooperated with the commission's efforts, have come to the conclusion that the Roman Catholic Church in France has molested 216,000 minors over the last 70 years.
Wow.
If you include people who were not clergy, but were tied to the church and working in a capacity with the church. So people working in Catholic youth programs or at Catholic schools.
Right.
That number goes up to 330,000.
That's a lot of molested children.
Yeah. They have found...
That's a lot of survivors who seem to have not wanted to talk about it for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, how is... That is, like, full-blown conspiracy when you have that many people affected, but nobody was willing to talk about it for so long. Or, like my dad was raised, you did talk about it, you just took it matter of fact, you didn't leave your kid alone with the priest.
It...
Wow. I mean, it was just like, wow, really?
It wasn't news. It was never in the news because it wasn't news that Catholic priests rape kids.
And yet nobody knew about it, but everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah. They found between 2,900 and 3,200 abusers in the French Catholic Church out of a total of 115,000 priests.
Right, what's the percentage there?
It'd be around 3%.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Of note, they did find that, well, the French Catholic Church is saying this is a horrible embarrassment. They're deeply sorry and will try to do better. The commission is saying this is horrible and should not. They were shocked by how many they found. And part of the methodology was they looked through records. They scoured police reports and news stories and did personal interviews, and they found thousands of cases. And then they looked at national polling data and surveys and were able to extrapolate the numbers based on those to come up with their estimates on the total. So they're trying to avoid doing like what just came out of Buffalo, New York, that we talked about a couple weeks ago, where they found 10% of Catholic priests to be have credible charges against them. This is a case of they're doing estimates and they're coming up with 3% of Catholic priests.
The theoretical 3%.
Which is probably more accurate there than the 10% in Buffalo, New York is.
Okay.
Which makes Buffalo, New York look way worse.
Yeah.
And they also found that it was, to put it in some perspective as well, on the other side, they found the Catholic Church in France's child sexual abuse rate was double the national average and way more happening in the church than anywhere else outside of the home.
Right. Because there's always inside the home.
Now, if the national average is 1.5% and the Catholic Church is 3%, then I would actually assume it would be that there's more happening at church than at the home.
Probably. But I don't know.
Just based on those numbers.
Yeah.
This is only the second national investigation into it.
After Ireland?
The Netherlands.
Netherlands.
Ireland's been doing a bunch of national investigations into stuff. They haven't dug into this one to this depth.
Oh, boy. They're going to, but nobody's going to... And we have a neighbor who's like, well, not, you know, that's that church. That's not all churches. He's like, Here, let me give you some sand to bury your head in some more.
Michelle Bachmann, you know, former representative from Minnesota, went on the Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman and said that conservatives need to build parallel institutions to protect themselves from the monstrous Biden administration.
So what, they need to build their own schools, their own hospitals, their own...
Everything.
Okay. Yeah, you just go ahead and waste all your money on that. Jesus.
Yeah. Parallel institutions.
Oh, they have. For one, I mean...
Oh, with schools, absolutely. The whole charter school system is creating a... parallel set of institutions for conservatives. Hospitals, they're almost all private. So you're creating a private parallel to private institutions. And there's already a bunch of parallel healthcare systems.
Banks. I mean, they all exist already.
Right. Yeah. It's.
But whatever, lady.
Now we need conservative banks because the mainstream ones aren't.
No.
Aren't conservative enough.
Right. We need leftist banks to help battle the conservative ones.
And we need conservative hospitals to have alternatives to the Catholic and Methodist and Baptist and Adventist and for-profit corporate hospitals.
Okay. So we got those covered already.
I don't know what she's saying. I don't think she even knows what she's talking about.
Nope.
Was saying that.
Just... I don't know. She's talking about like private businesses?
Like the
justice systems? What did the hell is she even saying?
Like the last time I interacted with the federal government was going into Yellowstone National Park.
There you go. We need Republican parks. No, wait, there wouldn't be any.
Right. Those would all be private logging claims and mining claims.
Or tourist destinations.
Yeah. Big game hunting
there you parks. Go.
But like the average person doesn't interact with federal institutions very much. And DC policies don't have much to do with private institutions much. Unless what she's saying is they need to create parallel institutions who are going to ignore OSHA rules on masking, COVID testing, and vaccination.
Or ignore the laws regarding equal and equitable treatment of people in the workplace, or whatever.
Yeah.
I just realized you're wearing your Atheist Nomad shirts.
Uh-huh.
Now I feel bad.
We're not on camera, so it doesn't really matter.
Oh, I mean, I'm wearing mine too. Ha-ha.
And apparently the war on 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 Christmas has already started.
Oh, yes.
Because Anthony Fauci, you know, the Dr. Fauci, told people over the weekend that it's just too soon to tell if we can safely gather for Christmas.
So he hasn't even said don't gather for Christmas like he did last year. He's just saying, yeah, it's a little too early to tell.
Yeah.
Therefore, he's the bad guy. He's the Grinch.
He's the Grinch because he's saying, yeah, don't know for sure if that'd be a good idea. He was then asked to clarify and did on Monday, and he had to say that he wasn't saying that you can't gather and said that he plans on spending Christmas with his family.
It's amazing.
And that these clarifications shouldn't be necessary, that people are intentionally trying to misinterpret him.
That's his life.
Yeah. And yeah, this was covered by RNC Research, Fox News, Newsmax.
Oh my God.
A bunch of Republicans. And no, nobody's trying to cancel Christmas. Nobody can cancel Christmas. Realistically, the only people those cautions are going to be, like, they'll be actually talking to are the vaccinated parents of small children.
Or the unvaccinated traveling from one place to another.
No, the reason why I say that is by that point, the only people who would be listening to that kind of guidance that are not vaccinated.
Oh, I see.
Are the ones that are too young to get vaccinated.
I see what you mean.
And yeah, it's a little too soon to tell if you should get all the cousins together for Christmas. That's all he was saying.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for news. We have No new supporters.
Womp, womp. But we love the ones we do have.
We do, absolutely. The one bit of feedback we got was from Raymond. He sent a picture of his Atheist Nomads coffee mug.
Nice.
That he got from atheistnomads.com/store.
Yay!
And damn, it's a good looking mug.
It's a good looking mug. Like your mug.
And
like your face.
There is a sale on the store coming up. I'll be sharing more details about that next week.
Okay. So not in the next week.
No.
Okay.
So if you want to get a shirt or mug or magnet, you can go to atheistnomads.com/store.
Although why would you now that you know that there's a sale coming up? I mean, I'm gonna shut up now.
Yeah.
We're promoting the crap out of this sale. What can I say?
If you want to support us on Patreon, atheistnomads.com/Patreon or PayPal link, you can find that all on the website. Contacts all there. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
And until next week, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.